This Redwood Empire episode on Old Fashioned Football on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Head to Cut.com, that's K-U-T-T.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100 times in NBA, NHL, college basketball, and more. Sign up today using promo code OFFSGPN to get 100% deposit match. We're also brought to you by Champs. Run your own March Madness pool and enter Champs free bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Just go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs to enter today. We're also brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit h2fbets.com. Use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month and start making smarter bets today.
Hey, what's up? This is Sam Acho, and you're listening to Old Fashioned Football.
Old-fashioned football.
You make this deal right now, you pancake-eating mother...
All right, deal!
Old-fashioned football.
Welcome, welcome to old-fashioned football. If you're wondering who you listen to, this is J-Mark. You can find me on the X at J-Mark Football. And if you're wondering who us is, that's at old-fashioned FB. Also, check us out on Instagram. We got a lot of cool bottle picks going up there recently. And if you're wondering who us is, before I keep going, I got to introduce my co-host on the pod and in life. You can find her on the X at The Mer Mark. Mer, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Justin. Really excited for this episode today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think we should kill any time. We should jump right into it. We have a really special guest from Redwood Empire Distillery talking some whiskey. Let's get right to Jeff.
Let's do it.
All right. All right, everybody. On Old Fashioned Football Podcast, we talked about having a guest. We let you know in our Discord. We tweeted about it or X'd about it. I don't know what the proper term of that is anymore. And we've let you all know. And today is the day. And our guest started his career as an accountant, so a little bit different of a career path, but we're going to let him kind of talk about that. Jeff Duckhorn of Redwood Empire, how's it going today?
It's going well. Yeah, thanks for having me today. It's the end of my day here, so happy to sit down for a few minutes and chat with you all and talk about whiskey, talk about football a little bit. I'm a casual fan, but
okay.
I'll get the fact that I'm a 49ers fan out of the way right up front.
I was going to ask you, like, do you follow a team?
Bay Area, California. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to chat about all of those good things.
Just happy to be here. I was pulling for him in the Super Bowl. Disappointing. Of course, they have Iowa State's Brock Purdy and George Kittle.
And George Kittle.
Iowa Hawkeye.
Yeah, so. I didn't even make that connection. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we were really pulling for them. And it's nothing against the Chiefs. I just wanted to see somebody new win.
Right.
You know. So After Detroit
got knocked out, right? It was like, well, anybody but the Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah, we're big Bears fans, mm-hmm. so I was happy to see Detroit get kicked out.
Yeah, sure. Sorry about that.
Yeah, right. No, it's all good. We did think it would be interesting if it mm-hmm. was Detroit and Kansas City and kind of a Midwest bowl. That would have been pretty interesting.
Yeah, it would have. Do you do any fantasy football?
Not anymore. I used to do the Yahoo fantasy football, and it just becomes very time-consuming. I'm very detail oriented, as the accounting background kind of alludes to. And so I do love numbers, but with fantasy football, I think I went a little too far down the rabbit hole. My wife's doing fantasy basketball right now, with the Ooh. NBA with her brother and a bunch of, his buddies. And it's fun, but I mean, it's just like, it gets super time consuming, but I enjoy it. So I've done it in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's very time consuming and going down that rabbit hole. That is what we do.
And then when your team's playing, like, it becomes challenging. You're like, I don't know. I want to root for my team, but also I know this isn't the right guy to have on my squad right now. So like that can you can have some conflicts there.
Mm-hmm.
So. For sure. Yeah. The NBA fantasy, I did that 1 year in a free league, and that's even more intense because
my wife had no idea what she was getting into because the cadence, I mean, at least the, you know, NFL, it's like once a week they play, right? And then,
yeah,
and then there's this gap, whereas the NBA is just all ongoing. And so it's really confusing how they break up the weeks of who you're playing against each week, because it's just games are all the time. So it's, it's fun though. I mean, it's, you know, it's a nice thing to do with like friends and maybe casual friends, because it's a good way to interact with people on a different level. So
yeah, for sure.
Definitely appreciation for it.
Yeah. Yeah. This year we ran our first family league, because we have a lot of family that they'll tune into the show, but they really don't know anything about fantasy football because they've never played it. So we ran our first family league, and it was fun. Banter. It got intense. Yeah.
It almost felt like Monopoly sometimes, getting around Monopoly board and the arguing.
Nothing like family competition.
For sure.
I saw you take a sip there, Justin. I'm sad to say that our whiskey didn't make it to you in time, I'm glad you're drinking something at least.
Yeah, that's okay, because it comes tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Next week we're going to be covering the free agency, and
so we'll
do
be drinking then. Yeah, some Redwood Empire.
I'm going to imbibe a little bit while we chat, because
yes, absolutely.
My tongue up a little bit. We just bottled this this week, and so it'll be getting out to market over the next month, and this is our newest addition to our big family behind me here, over there.
Yeah.
For the radio people, it's just a bunch of bottles on a shelf. But so super excited about this. This is our first wheated bourbon. So I'm rediscovering it. We've been putting the blend together for quite a while now, but these always are different when you finally get the final blend together. You get it in tank, and then when you bottle it, it does go through an awkward kind of maybe ugly duckling phase, is a little bit strong, but it gets a little awkward phase, and then it takes a little while to open back up. And so, like I said, it's been in bottle for, you know, I think this was the first day, so about a week now. So I'm just kind of waiting for it to slowly open up for me, but pretty excited about where it's going to go.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah. Also, just to throw in real quick, I saw, because we have Iowa and Nebraska listeners, Spirit World, which we were just at a couple weeks ago in Omaha, Nebraska, has a killer deal on your three main: Pipe Dream, Monarch, and remind me of the third one.
Emerald Giant. Yes. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They got I think it was $26.99, which any whiskey that you can get for that price, I mean, that's an amazing price. We have had the Pipe Dream before, actually, in the Colorado Shining Hotel bar.
Yes. In Estes Park. We tried it. Yeah.
And big fan of that. So especially, I mean, if you could pick that up for $26.99, that's an amazing deal in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal. Cool.
Yeah. So let's start kind of, I guess, at the beginning. You were an accountant. Now you're a distiller. Can you kind of give us the Jeff story? Kind of walk us through how you got to where you're at?
Let's do it. I still do love accounting, and a little bit of accounting goes into every bottle of whiskey that we make here. So I do pay homage to my roots, but I love numbers. I always love numbers. I'm one of those lucky people that I just have a brain that I get numbers, and that's kind of the language that I speak. And so I've always appreciated numbers, went to school for that, and got out of college and kind of just gravitated to a career that was in multiple forms, but typically evolved around that, and numbers and accounting and finance and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up I'm moving away, and then moved back here to Northern California, where I actually grew up, and got involved in the wine business. And my cousin, was helping him run a small wine import company, and then moved to a bigger winery. And that was like, right, I think 2011-ish. I don't know, you can fact check me later, but 2011-ish, we'll call it. And to work for our parent company. So it was called Purple Wine Company at the time. And all owned by one gentleman, Derek Benham, very successful entrepreneur in the wine business. He's really just been amazing at building up brands over the years. Started with a brand called Blackstone Merlot, kind of hit the Merlot trend on its way up when it was hot, and then sold that, and then founded a new company with Purple with some different wine brands, and Mark West Pinot Noir was kind of the big up and coming brand. And so then now hitting the Pinot phase as Pinot was getting hot, you know, that sideways effect happened where Merlot went crashing down and Pinot came up and rode the Pinot to the finish line. And then we sold that big brand, you know, a little less than a year after I'd come on to be the cost accountant for the wine side. And I've been doing wine for a while and it was fine. But then this kind of talk started of a distillery maybe happening. And our owner, Derek, being kind of always wanting to be on the forefront of up and coming trends, was really excited to get involved in a new space and build out a craft distillery in our winery here in Sonoma County. And so talk of that started happening after the sale of Mark West, and we got into 2013. And I was like, man, how do I get involved in that? Like, I was ready for a career change for sure, and wanting to get in more into production. And what better way to get into production than making whiskey, right? So I quickly raised my hand and was like, hey, how do I get to be involved in that? Well, like, you'll be involved. We got to figure out who's going to, you know, do the cost accounting for all the spirits. And we're going to have fixed assets and have to manage that. And there'll be plenty of work for you. And I was like, I don't want to do that work anymore. I want to make spirits. Like, that sounds amazing. And they're like, well, what's your resume? I mean, do you know how to make spirits? And I was like, well, not really, but I've been home brewing forever. Like, and this is true. Like, I've been making beer since probably before I could legally drink. I love fermentations of all kind. And so I've been kind of, especially when you're staring at spreadsheets all day, you got to have some sort of creative outlet. So that was kind of was just like getting home and getting my hands dirty and playing with different fermentations of beer and bread and kombucha and pickled vegetables and all that good stuff. And then working outside in the garden and growing stuff and just, you know, just trying to have a counterpoint to that, the number side. And so I started bringing in my homebrew and my bread kind of got to know our owner a little bit. And I'm like, hey, try my beer. And he's like, I don't want to try your beer. I've had home brews before. They're terrible. Like,
right.
I can buy good beer, like, if I want. And I'm like, come on, just try it. And it happened that it was a bottle condition, like a double a Belgian, you know, kind of higher alcohol, 6 months bottle conditioned, and something actually, you know, they don't all turn out really good, but this turned out pretty well. So he was like, okay, well, that's not bad. You know, so I kind of insinuated myself into the conversation and it took us a while to get built out, and 13 became 14, and we didn't get up and running until spring of 2015. And through some happy, lucky circumstances for myself, the distiller we had kind of pinned to be our day one distiller just decided this wasn't the right fit for him in the meantime of the long build out we had, and decided to move on like right when we got operational. And I was kind of in the wings. I'd been talking to him and trying to learn what I could from him and insinuate myself in his conversations. And so 3 weeks into a shiny new distillery, we didn't have a distiller. And it was like, what are we going to do? And then I'm like the kid in the corner. It's like, put me in, coach. And they put me in. I mean, it was crazy, right? Spring of 15, I'm running a distillery and I don't really know what I'm doing. But I read a lot. We experimented a lot. I've gotten a lot of great education along the way. Needless to say, nothing we made in 2015 really ever saw the light of day. Maybe until at least the end of 2015, because it takes a while to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
I had a great runway to work with. I mean, our owner was very patient. He had made his money already, so we didn't have to turn around and make a quick buck. So we were able to really play the long game, which is just has led to all of the success that Redwood's had over the years, is being smart and being diligent and being thoughtful of how you roll these things out. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where it started. If you talk to 10 distillers, it's pretty wild. Well, we're all going to have different backstories. There's no real formal education in the U.S. You can go out. There's a lot of education for winemakers, for brewers. Now there's a ton of education available, but for distillers, there's really no formal education available. You got to go across the pond to England for that. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, you can homebrew, you can make wine at home, but you cannot home distill. It's illegal to make any sort of spirits at home. So there's not a lot of avenues for us to really, experiment without just getting in and getting dirty and doing it. And so most of us have different backgrounds. My master blender, Lauren Patz, who's been with us for 3 years now, she comes from a radically different background. Like you know, literature, and she lived in Japan for 3 years and taught English as a second language, you know, was working for a chocolate company before. So we all kind of have fun, different backgrounds. And that, I think that's one of the cool things about distillers in this industry is it's really quickly up and coming, and it's kind of the Wild West right now. And so there's a lot of real fun, free thinking and interesting and diverse opinions that are forming or, you know, evolving in this space.
All right, we'll get right back to Jeff in a second, but first I got to let you know that we are brought to you by the Merch Madness. That's right, it's Merch Madness time. 15% off everything in the store with promo code MADNESS. I think you should go on over there and get some old-fashioned football t-shirts. I'm wearing
Look
one
at
right
you
now.
Wearing our swag.
That's right. And the hat. I got the hat if you prefer a hat. We got a lot of swag
You're
there.
You're just decked out.
I know. Make sure you go check those out for sure. We're also brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Peer-to-peer social betting is a new and better way to bet. Bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes. Tons of fun social features that give it the feel of a betting social network. I saw politics on this. What better time to bet on politics? Because, man, this is the time to bet who you think, I guess, is going to win the election. If one of your friends and you don't agree on something, you just can't agree. Just put some money on it. Why not? You can also go over there and bet on Sean and Kramer. They've been doing some fun bets on who's going to have the most correct picks for a basketball for any given day. Make sure you check that out. Go ahead and pick your favorite. You know, I'm not going to say which mine is. Miranda's going to say that it's none of them, but that's okay.
How dare you?
Cut offers low VIG and fully customizable odds. You can create your own bets, and they handle the payment side of things, so you never have to chase anybody down and cut them. And they got rewards, cash back every single time you bet against your friends or other users. Doesn't have to be your friends. Download Cut today in the App Store or over at cut.com. That's K-U-T-T. And use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. You also know that we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports, and it's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. So grab your Redwood Empire whiskey and get in on a pick'em game where you just pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. I love those odds. And just pick between 2 and 5 players to build your pick'em entry. Plus, it's draft season. It's not too early to get your best ball drafts in. It's fun to kind of draft the rookies before they're even on a team. All you got to do is sign up today with promo code OFFSUPN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or visit them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our promo code OFFSGPN, that's off SGPN, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. That's right, you get a special. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. All right, now let's get back to Jeff and talking about Redwood Empire Whiskey.
It's interesting how you said that the different backgrounds, because I think that was a common misconception that I had anyways before we started this podcast, that every distiller's background would be sort of similar, like they all went to distilling school or something. Sure. But through the podcast, I mean,
everybody has their own story. Yeah. And it's so interesting to like learn how it all came to be,
whether it was in the
what number podcast is this now?
This is
it's over 100, right?
This is 113. For distiller episodes, or we had I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't remember. Over a dozen, I think. But yes. But yeah, I mean, we have some that it was in their family. We had a doctor. We had somebody that they just decided to, hey, I wanted to make whiskey. I like whiskey and I wanted to make it. And so they just started. Just the crazy backgrounds or just different backgrounds is crazy to me.
Awesome.
Yeah. You are the first accountant, though. First accountant.
Okay. I get to travel a lot for work now. And so every once in a while, somebody will come up to me after I tell this story and they'll be like, you give hope to accountants out there in the world. There's something else. And then, again, there's nothing wrong with being an accountant. Like some people love it. And I do have a passion for it still. And numbers are great, but it's just fun that people are just like, oh, you give me hope that I could reinvent myself and do something else. And it's just cool. I mean, we live long lives now. Right. So it's like, you get to figure out what you want to do, and then you get to figure out what you want to do again at some point. And you know, maybe even again. And so a lot of us have multiple careers. And so for me, I've just been very fortunate that this kind of fell in my lap.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Can you talk about, like, so when this was all getting started, how did Redwood Empire become the name for the whiskey?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple different ways to frame the answer to that, but the marketing story and hat, and I'll put my marketing hat on for a little bit earlier when we started chatting, but we are actually in the Redwood Empire. So if you ever have the good fortune to come out to Northern California, you know, most people will fly into San Francisco, and then you go over the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, iconic, you know, really red bridge, but it's the Golden Gate Bridge. And you get across that and you get into, right away you get into, you know, Muir Woods is right there. And that's the first old growth redwood forest that's part of the Redwood Empire. So this is actually a geographic place that spans north of San Francisco up to the Oregon border. And it's very iconic. There's a ton of, you know, giant old redwoods throughout many different forests, you know, in Northern California. You know, it's not on TV anymore, but in days past, there was the Dodge truck driving through the giant redwood tree. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of iconic imagery. I mean, Return of the Jedi was filmed in a, you know, old growth redwood area. So they've kind of seeped into some of our culture. But for us that live here locally, they're really, it's our backyard, and they're amazing. And here, you know, half an hour from the distillery, we have a small grove, you know, called Armstrong Woods. And there's trees in there that are well over 1,000 years old, and they're over 300 feet tall. And they're just, it's pretty awe-inspiring. You walk into one of these forests and they're very quiet because there's so many eons of like pine needles hitting the ground and, you know, and creating this soft layer that almost ends up being like a sound muffler. So they're super quiet. There's not a lot of animals in there because it's kind of dark because the trees are so tall. So it's very quiet and very awe-inspiring and quite amazing. And so we're just, you know, we're here and we're in the middle of it. We want to pay homage to that. We're very proud of the fact that we're kind of doing things a little bit differently with the way we make whiskey, the way we blend whiskey, just kind of our whole philosophy for how we approach this. And it's very Northern California based. So we kind of just want to tap into those roots. And so when we started talking about names, you know, Redwood Empire, just like, boom, that's our backyard. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's, also, you know, we've got a lot of polarizing things going on in our world right now, but I don't come across too many people that are anti-tree, right? I mean, most people are like, I like trees. Trees are good, right? So we can all kind of appreciate trees. We need more trees in our lives. They do a lot of good things for us. So,
yeah, we absolutely need more trees. We plant trees every year. we're trying to keep planting and planting. I want to do a whole front grove in front of our place, but
yeah. Love it. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of different angles to it, but for really, for us, the main thing is it's our backyard. It's our home.
Yeah. So you mentioned it goes all the way up to the Oregon border. So we were on the Oregon coast, right on that border. And we came down into the forest there because we had never seen redwoods before. And that quietness that you mentioned, that, like, I remember that, like, that there's just something, you walk into those trees and it is like, it's different. It's really neat.
It's pretty wild. I've been there when there's like a classroom of second graders, which anywhere else in the world, they would be wild and out of control. I mean, I've got a fourth grader, you know, and so I know these kids, you know, like they get wild, but you take them into a redwood forest and they're even quiet. They're like, they look around and they're like, and it's pretty wild, like just universally, and people tap into it. So it's super.
All right. We got to interrupt Jeff one more time. I promise it's the last time. But Miranda, why don't you tell everybody where they can get a bunch of data for betting on the NBA season? Go ahead.
First of all, it's data. Data.
I know.
But you can do that over on Hall of Fame Bets. Win bigger by betting smarter this NBA season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NBA and soccer bet with historical stats and data. You can enter any parlay idea into Hall of Fame Bets' revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value.
Stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame Bets to craft more intelligent, editor-driven parlays. Download Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use code SUPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. Now, back to Jeff.
Cool. Yeah. Were you up at Patrick's Point or north of there?
We were in, like around the Samuel H. Boardman.
In Oregon there.
Yeah, in Oregon. And then we came just right across the border.
I don't remember the park. We weren't there very long.
Yeah, I know. There's a Tule Elk are up there. Super cool. Really quiet up there. It's very pretty.
And you didn't get to go into the trees because he broke his ankle.
Oh,
like
man.
Within 2 minutes of getting out of the car.
You gotta watch those roots. Those roots will get you.
It was on a roof.
It was. So I had a friend that I said, I told him like, hey, I'm going to go see the redwoods. I'm really excited. And he's like, can you take a picture hugging one? I just want a picture of you hugging a redwood tree. I was like, yeah, of course. So I get up there and, you know, like you said, the roots are massive. You got to almost climb the roots to get up to the tree. And I hug it. And as I'm coming down, I looked and I was like, all right, it's flat. I can jump down now. It was not flat. I rolled my ankle and broke it. And
I didn't believe you.
She didn't. She's like, get up. You're fine. You just sprained it. And I'm like, no, something's wrong.
No, we were just going.
Yeah, have a couple shots of whiskey. You'll be right.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, you sat in the car and I was not going to be there and not go in and walk a little.
I tried to go with you, but I couldn't make it. Yeah.
So, well, we didn't know. Yeah. Right. I did for a little bit. I went in there because we had never seen redwoods before. And...
Well, good. I'm glad you got to check it out. Then you know they're pretty amazing. So and sadly, a lot of them were logged out over the last several hundred years. I mean, a lot of San Francisco was originally built with redwood because they're straight and they make great timbers, you know, and massive beams. A lot of it they were logged out. People just they used what they had around, not knowing or having the ability to. Any other choices if these things were over 1,000 years old. So, fortunately people had the good thought, state, and federal parks to lock up what was left. And so we have all these great parks now that are, the rest is locked up into perpetuity. And what's cool about our brand, beyond the name Redwood Empire is that each of our expressions, we were talking about the core three earlier, the pipe dream, the lost monarch, the emerald giant. These are all named after still living redwood trees in Northern California redwood forest. And literally all of our expressions to this date are named after living redwood trees, which is fun.
That's so really we can cool.
tie that back further. It's great for us for storytelling. The imagery on our labels is great. Like Emerald Giant, for example, our kind of our core rye has this really cool image. For people that are actually looking at the video, for people not, it's this really cool dude that's kneeling down and planting a tree. And the imagery is also inspired by John Muir. He was the grandfather of the National Park System, also a writer, very creative guy. And so there's little quotes on each of our bottles from John Muir. And as I was talking about earlier, that first old growth forest you come to after San Francisco is Muir Woods, named after John Muir. So there's just so much to play into. I mean, it's a marketing person's dream, for all of the storytelling that can be told with this. And for us to have it in our backyard is just, it's great and super fun.
Yeah. The labels are amazing. I think that's what first drew me to it. You walk down just at your liquor store, you walk down the aisle and there's so many different whiskeys. It's hard to grab each one and like, oh, what's this one? What's this one? So sometimes, unfortunately, it is just the labeling or the bottle that's like, oh, that's really unique. Now I have to look at it. And the labels of the Redwood Empire, I mean, it definitely jumps out at you. It's I think even when we were at the I can't remember the hotel's name, but the Shining Bar in Colorado, I saw the Pipe Dream and I was like, oh, I remember
the Stanley. Sorry.
Thank you. I was like, I remember seeing that label and wanting to try that whiskey. So I was like, I got to order that. We got to order it and try it. So,
all right. Then that worked. Yeah. I mean, it makes my job so much easier when we have beautiful packaging and then I have to follow through, right? Like packaging's great. You open the bottle, you try it once and then you're like, then that's it. So like, that's my job is to make sure that you walk away with an experience that you feel like you want to go buy more, but it does make life a lot easier for us in the distillery when we have this beautiful packaging, this great story to really help align with everything that we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And something unique about the distillery is that you guys plant a tree for every bottle that is sold. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So it's on the back label of all of our bottles, but it's Trees for the Future is the organization we work with. They are a global organization. And so I usually clarify that they're not really planting redwoods. We don't have, 1200 years to wait for the big redwoods to grow again.
Sure.
So they're planting trees where they're needed the most. So they're working a lot in equatorial regions. They're working in South America. They're working a lot in Africa now. They're planting crop trees that help feed communities. And so they're a really great global organization. And so we're very proud that we've been working with them. We hit over 1 million trees planted last fall. There's a counter on our website. I think we're up to 1.5 million now, but really, really great organization. I'm super excited that we get to be part of. So it's fun.
How did that partnership start?
I wasn't directly involved in that, but I mean, we were just kind of talking about what we could do to be more involved with trees, obviously. And so there's a couple organizations out there. We work with another one called One Tree Planted, which is more localized. So that's more US based. And we've done some really cool things where we replanted mangroves in Florida or done, kind of riparian river restoration here for places that flooded or fire related and stuff. But Trees of the Future just, has that really cool global reach where our impact just felt like it could be the best use for each dollar spent, so to speak.
Very cool. Yeah. And speaking of sustainability with the trees, I was reading that you guys, I got to fact check myself here, but, so you allow preserving both water and energy with the still, which we're kind of going to get into the still a little bit later. The farmers use mesh as feed. Are there some other ones that I'm missing there that you guys work on for sustainability or limiting the amount of resources used at the distillery?
Those are the main things. We're on a well. We're pulling from a great local aquifer. We have a pond. Just running a continuous column, just the fact of running a continuous column, they're way more efficient on a number of different ways. Single pass distillation, less, resource intensive, less energy use, less water consumption for cooling. And so they end up being just, more friendly in those aspects as well. So I think you kind of hit the main points.
Yeah, very cool.
We use local suppliers wherever we can. We didn't always do that. When you're starting out a distillery like we did in 15, I mean, we're trying to see what's out there. And so I've utilized a lot of different grain suppliers over the years. But starting in 18, we started dabbling with some local grain. We're very fortunate. Just a couple hours north and east of here is the Sacramento Valley. And they grow a ton of different crops up there. And they can really grow most of the grains that we need. The malt, I believe, is grown a little bit closer to the Oregon border. Malt is a little different climate. But so we've started dabbling with that. And so we've been able to localize our grain production. Our cooperage that we use that builds our barrels, they're assembling the barrels just an hour north of us. And so we continue to strive for being as local as we can, but you also don't want to compromise along the way, right? I mean, there's lots of people making amazing grain throughout the US and throughout the world for that matter. And so we do from time to time bring in things from other places. We use different cooperages as well. I mean, we don't want to limit ourselves just for the sake of story. We want to make the best possible product we can while also being conscious about what we can do to kind of pull those levers and be conscious where we can.
Yeah, for sure.
So you had mentioned, I feel like climate was kind of in there up by Oregon. So we, from talking with like a distillery in Texas or in Colorado in the mountains, the climate really changes like the distilling process and can impact the aging process. Does the climate out there, does it impact it differently than it would impact like a Tennessee or a Kentucky whiskey?
For sure. I'm very fortunate that I really get to wear two hats. I get to be a blender and a distiller. And so we make a pretty significant amount of whiskey every year. We kind of average about 1,000 barrels a year. We did a little more than that last year. It was kind of our biggest year ever. But very significant amount of whiskey for a craft distillery, but for the big guys out there, that's a drop in the bucket, right? And for where we want to be someday, it's not really enough. And so we identified pretty early on that we wanted to grow beyond what we could make in house and started sourcing whiskey, pretty early on. And so I've got to really watch and shepherd, you know, whiskeys from other parts of the country, bring them in age, bring them in new, kind of see how they work in different climates, stuff from Indiana, stuff from Kentucky, a little bit from Tennessee, and really watch these different climates. And so it's been very fun to watch and see how whiskey, you know, how it does in different climates. Whiskey's very, mm-hmm. in barrel is very driven by heat, but also by humidity is a big part of that as well. And mm-hmm. so in a very humid climate, your proof's going to drop in barrel because there's already so much water in the atmosphere that the easiest thing to get out is the alcohol and your proof goes down. In a very dry climate, you know, like Texas, the opposite of that happens. You're very dry and the water gets out first. We're here in Sonoma County. We are relatively dry, even though we're only a half hour from the ocean. And so, our proofs do go up a little bit, because of that, we enter in at 110. We've kind of made conscious decision to enter in a little bit lower so we can really tap into some more of those wood sugars, get a little softer spirit, get that little pop and end up typically around 115. We're going to age slower because we just don't get super hot here. So mm-hmm. we have a month or two in the year where we'll touch on the 90s, you know, hundreds are starting to happen now like they didn't in the past, but not aggressively hot. And so we try to encourage that heat in the few months we can. We have some areas of our rick house area, you know, that we can kind of bring some of that heat in, but by and large we're pretty temperate. And so we work with what we have, and so we know that we're gonna have to wait a little longer, and we're okay with that. So our bottled and bonds, we could have released it 4 year, you know, by law, you know, they just have to be 4 year. We waited an mm-hmm. extra year, 5 year, because just I personally didn't feel it was ready. We tasted with the group and we're like, let's give them another year. And so we're kind of leaning into our local terroir, so to speak, you know, and really learning that it's great. It works for us, but yes, I think this is going to be one of the things that you start to see more and more as more craft distilleries come up and we mature, as you're going to see this regionality where you're going to see, as you mentioned earlier, distilleries from Colorado, there's a thing going on there. There's Texas has got its thing. Northwest, you know, you're going to, you know, the Midwest. So you're going to see these regionalities that, and a lot of it is driven by climate and then also local resources, local raw materials. And so for us, mm-hmm. it's a little bit more temperate climate and we just wait a little longer and we have a little bit more restrained, a little bit more delicate spirit at the end of the day.
Nice. I'm glad you brought up the fact that you guys sourced some whiskey in. That was really interesting and unique to me because it seems like, especially with the smaller distilleries, they're either 100% making their own or 100% sourcing. And I think the fact that you guys marry the two together is a really cool and really unique thing, because there's not a lot, from what I've seen anyways, there's not a lot of distilleries that are doing that. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you're able to take like the younger whiskeys and the older whiskeys and put those together to create this amazing blend. And I think that's a really cool thing. And so, yeah, I'm glad you explained kind of where that came about and why you guys decided to do that. But do you think that, does that kind of make your job more fun? Cause you get to distill and you get to blend, you get to do both.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, yeah. We have, you know, we're over 17,000 barrels we own currently, about mm-hmm. 5,000 is whiskey we've distilled in house. The rest is sourced, and it's so much fun to watch these barrels mature over time. And also just to see the variations from distillery to distillery. We've been able to, you know, form some partnerships with great distilleries. Now there's now more options than there were in the past for mm-hmm. getting a contract distillate. And you can now mm-hmm. dictate, you know, mash bills, you know, cooperage selection, what you want. And so there's a lot, that lot that goes into it. It makes it very yeah. complicated as well, where the accountant, you know, spreadsheet hat is nice to have. We're building right now our largest ever blend. It's a pipe dream blend. We're getting ready to do our next cask strength run for our core three offerings that are at 90 proof. We do a cask version of each that end up being around 116 ish proof. And mm-hmm. we launch those. Intent is once a year. And so we're getting ready to launch that a little later this spring. And so we're building a blend right now, 275 barrels of bourbon. It's going to be roughly 12,000 gallons of cask proof whiskey in a tank. Like, it's pretty mind boggling when you think about that. I don't really want to go home at night. I just want to stay here and like hang out with that tank until we get it all bottled, because it's a little nerve wracking, but it's also really cool. And so there's a ton of different components from different places mm-hmm. in the US. And so it's very fun to watch, you know, all these individual single barrels get put together into this beautiful complex blend. And it's a very fun part of our, what Lauren and I get to do in the distillery.
Very cool.
When you're sourcing your whiskey, like what goes into that? Like, are you looking for whiskey from a certain region or a certain?
I mean, we're looking for more partnership, more long-term contracts where we can have some say and what we'd like to do and just and stability. And so, and there is, like I said, more of that's becoming available and there's even more coming online starting this year and into next year. And so, which is great. So we're looking for really a partnership where we can work together, you know that they're going to stay true to what we want to make. And that it's, because these are all long lived things. I mean, things that people are making for us now aren't going to see the light of day for 4 to 5 years. And so
that's true.
It all takes a really long time. And that's why the sourcing for me, it achieves a few goals, but it's great. It allows us to age our whiskey longer. I mean, we're very fortunate in that we're not trying to rush to market another 2-year-old bourbon. The world really doesn't need to see another 2-year-old bourbon. Bourbon takes time. I mean, all whiskeys take time, but bourbon in particular. And so for us, I'm just very fortunate that we get to hold back what we're making longer and let this sourced whiskey, you know, blend in and then have all these, you know, different opportunities to use all the different whiskeys that we have. So it's very fun. It's just, we have this beautiful big, you know, canvas that we get to work with and all these different colors that we get to paint on it. And it's a blast.
Yeah. There's, the more you drink whiskey, obviously the more you kind of get a palate for picking up different things. And I feel like the farther we've gotten into this show or the process of learning whiskey and everything, the more obvious it is when you have a young bourbon. I mean, that kind of, it starts, some of them anyways, it really stands out like, oh, this is a really young one. This could have aged a little bit longer or something for sure. I want to touch on your column still, because I don't think I've seen one like it. It's a micro column two column distillation process. It's really unique looking. Can you kind of walk us through, you know, how you guys decided to use that and how that works a little bit differently to create, like, you know, a more efficient or a better consistency in the whiskey?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, typically I'd have it in the background here. It's a virtual background, but I couldn't figure out how to do that in this short time we had. But it's really fun still. I mean, being a wine company, deciding to get into spirits, we didn't really have a good idea what we wanted to do and what equipment we wanted. And so we kind of started kind of poking around, see what was out there. And I don't know exactly how the relationship started, but, you know, we went to a trade show or whatever, and this company Headframe, based in Butte, Montana, I started chatting with them, and they kind of had the promise of this really cool, Swiss Army knife for craft distillers. And you can do a little bit of everything. If you want to make vodka, great. Gin, great. You know, whiskey, perfect. You know, so we were intrigued by that. The gentleman that started the company came from kind of the biofuel business and refining. And so super smart guy and saw a need in the craft space for something that was a little bit more precise than some of the, you know, kind of classic small pot distilling, but not giant like some of the bigger column stills. And so he designed this thing, and I think we got like rev two of it, like the second that came into existence. And it's been a lot of fun. I mean, we've been running for 9 years. We've made, thousands and thousands of barrels off of it, but it's super cool. The stripping column is pretty classic in a stripping column. It's 14 trays. It's got bubble caps. It does kind of all the things a normal stripping column would do. But then it has, in the middle, it has two additional columns. They're all 18 feet tall, if you can envision them. They're all about a foot in diameter. So stripping column for, you know, your first pass. If you want to make vodka, you go through the next series of columns. It would ideally be one column, but that would be 40 feet tall. So for most small spaces, you don't have that kind of headspace. So they break it into two smaller 18-foot columns. And then that jacks your proof up, you know, continues to rectify it to up to 190 if you want to make vodka. Otherwise, you bypass those columns and you run to which is the unique part you're speaking to, which is a much smaller column that's called the bar bay or a demethylizer. And it's very kind of precise piece of equipment. It's another It's another distillation. It's another small column, and it cuts the heads, and it does a very good job of that. Everything's temperature controlled at the top. And so for us, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to work with. It makes very delicious spirit. Every time I have people taste the White Dog off the still, they're always kind of shocked that it's so drinkable and so soft and approachable. And it's just, it's very fun. So I've really enjoyed working with it. It's got botanical baskets on the back. We prototyped our gin back there and started making our gin on it. Liked the way the botanical baskets worked, but didn't like having to use one still for both. And so we actually had a unique botanical only still built for us for making our gin. Yeah, it's been very fun to run, but my only complaint is it's not big enough. And so we do have a much bigger Vendome picked out and designed, mostly built at this point, that we're looking to land next year so that we can increase our growth. And it's pretty crazy when you start talking about scaling, you know, when the still we have picked out, and you had Jordan on from Dylan from Savage and Cook. Our new still is going to be very similar to what they have. So it's a 2 foot, you know, roughly 40 foot tall Vendome column. When you double the diameter, double the height, you 9x the output. And so we'll very comfortably be able to go from 1,000 barrels a year to, you know, 5,000 and closer to 10 if we really want to go that route. So very excited to get that up and running. But for now, the still we've had, I mean, it's done a great job. It's made a lot of beautiful spirit for us. We'll also keep it running for sure in the background and use it for specialty projects here and there.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah, we'll have listeners can go see it on the Redwood Empire website, but we'll also have a photo of it in our post that we put up because it's just really unique. It is,
Yeah, I have, from going to different distilleries or just looking at the stills that everyone has, they're beautiful.
Yeah, they are.
They're cool. I mean, they're so cool. Like it's there's a definite geek factor. The other still, the gin still we have, is called the Hot Rod, and the gentleman, the designer, is from Detroit, and so it's Detroit Steelworks is the manufacturer, and so it's got this very like hot rodish component to it. It's all stainless and it has automotive wrap on it, and it's super cool. But they all have their own personalities, and they're just super fun. Yeah, and then they're making whiskey, which is like, I mean, how's it cooler than that?
Right.
So we talked about your core three. What other products do you make there at the distillery?
We're up to a lot now. You had a great picture of him earlier. I think you'll probably hopefully post that on your site, but we have our flagship items, our core three, that we call them. And those are available year round. And that's Pipe Dream, Lost Monarch, Emerald Giant. And those are really the ones that are kind of built to be available everywhere. They retail out. They're typically, they're cocktail friendly. They're 90 proof. So the goal is to get them in cocktails where we can. And those are all blends. They're all blends of whiskey that we've been making in-house, blended with whiskeys from around the United States. Starting 3 years ago, we launched our first Ball and Bond, and we did a Ball and Bond bourbon and a rye. And that was a very exciting time for us in the distillery, because up until then, we had only released spirit that was a blend. And so as a young distillery, getting your first 100% grain glass spirit out to market can be a little bit, there's a lot of trepidation there, because, you know, it's great to ride on the coattails of distilleries that have been running for a long time and know very well what they're doing and make thousands and thousands of barrels. But to get your own spirit out there and have it by itself is a little daunting. And so we were very excited that was well received and has allowed us to keep going with that. And so we have a Ball & Bond bourbon that's called Grizzly Beast, and a rye that's called Rocket Top Rye. As I alluded to earlier, they're both 5-year, because we decided to wait another year. And so those come out once a year, typically late summer. And we're just getting ready to release batch 4 of that. Lauren and I have been working diligently through several hundred barrels to get our final blend put together. And very excited that this is going to be great. Every year they're different. They're super fun. I have them behind me as well. But if you get a chance to get a bottle, the back label has a white panel on it that's changes each year. And so it has the particulars of that individual batch. And so it'll tell you when it went into barrel, when it went into bottle, how many barrels were in the batch, And then for me, which I think is super cool, and as a consumer is very cool, it tells you exactly what the blended mash bill is for that batch. Because typically in a season, which you have to be bottle and bond, you're only allowed to distill from a single distilling season, which is usually a 6 month window. It is a 6 month window, January through June or July through December. But for us, we usually have like 6 to 8 batches in that season. So it allows us to kind of blend from among our stocks, kind of what we were doing in that season. And we like to play. And so there's usually a couple kind of fun oddballs in there. Our batch 3 Grizzly Beast had triticale in it, which is this crazy hybrid grain that's a hybrid of rye and wheat and super fun and yummy and tasty on its own. In addition to corn, of course, being a bourbon, but also rye, wheat, and barley. So it's a 5-grain, which is cool. Our Rocket Top has a touch of corn in it. We do a lot of very high rye ryes here, usually 90 plus on our mash bills. But every once in a while, we'll do a different mash bill with some corn or something in it. And so these are fun because they're different every year. So they're kind of the counterpoint to our available everyday items. They're a seasonal release and different every batch. And so that's Ball and Bond. Cast Strength, which I talked about earlier. We're on our second year of that. We're a couple batches into that. Exact same recipe as our core offering, but just not proofed down. So that gives people the opportunity to taste something at a higher proof. I don't need to tell you both that Cast Strength is pretty hot right now. And we're enjoying kind of riding that trend and getting to expose people to just how whiskey tastes, at kind of its native higher cast strength. And it's fun to taste that side by side with our core too, because you can really get the difference of how spirit tastes at 90 proof versus, call it 116 proof. Just in the last couple months, we've launched our new series of products called the Small Lot Series. And that's the one I'm drinking right now. Yeah. This is the one we're just getting to bottle. This is a weeded bourbon. But we also launched a high rye bourbon with a very high rye content. So legally legally bourbon at about 51% corn, but then 45% rye. So really high rye, touch of wheat, touch of barley. And then a passion project for me personally, our first 100% single malt. So that we got to market as well. So yeah, so we like to play a lot. We have a lot of stuff going on.
Very cool.
Can I ask you what your favorite is?
Oh, I get asked that a lot. It's kind of a loaded question, but
it is. Yeah,
it depends upon the occasion and what's going on. I mean, personally, I love rye. I love the fact that Lauren and I get to educate and go out and market and show off rye and maybe bring some people back to the rye table that have been hurt by rye in the past. Because there's such a beautiful diversity of rye out there now. Mm-hmm. And I think the time is ripe for consumers to really explore it. And so I do love our ryes. I think our Emerald Giant does a great job of kind of putting a little softer edge on that classic really high rye and making it a little bit more approachable. Our Rocket Top is super fun, our Ball and Bond rye, but very different, much more herbaceous and full bodied and a little aggressive. So those are probably two that I really appreciate a lot and just like to show off. But right now the single malt's pretty cool because adventure started for me because I was bringing homebrew into our ownership and having him taste it. And so to come full circle and to get to market something that we made in house from 100% from beer essentially and distilled and then laid down here is pretty fun to see that see the light of day. So that's probably my favorite right now.
Nice. Yeah. We, anytime somebody hears that we have a podcast that talks whiskey, we get asked, well, what's your favorite? And it is it's a very hard question to answer because it depends on the mood.
I was going to say whiskey's it's a mood.
Yeah.
What are you feeling?
How are you going to drink it? Are you going to have it neat? You can do it in a cocktail, How many are you going to have? Like, how are you feeling? I mean, it's so mood driven and occasion and experience driven. And so, and that's really our goal with our portfolio is to be able to offer a lot of different things for different occasions. We have our core series that are everyday drinkers. You know, they work great in cocktails. We have some higher proof things that you would definitely want to have a little neat, you know, maybe throw a rock in. You know, we have some things that are very out of the box, you know, exploration. So yeah, we're trying to kind of hit on some different points to give the consumer choice.
Yeah.
So speaking of the consumer, we talked to a distiller recently that brought up a point. Now, we have not really thought of the marketing side of whiskey before, but the fact that consumers, you know, every so on years, I guess, you have a new group of consumers that are entering the market, and they might have a little bit different tastes or want something a little bit different and trying to kind of hit that moving target. So I guess I was going to ask, what's your best selling product, and have you seen that change over the past couple of years, or has it stayed pretty consistent?
Yeah. I mean, great question. Bourbon is, you know, bourbon almost sells itself. I mean, that's just, that's where American whiskey is right now. I think that some of these new and up and coming things are starting to chip away at that a little bit, but bourbon is still by far our biggest sale, you know, and so our bourbons in general sell more than our other products. So Pipe Dream is about 50% of our sales still. But it is fun to see that the rye are starting to chip away. And then Lost Monarch, which is one of our core three, but it's not a bourbon or a rye. It's a blend of the two. And so it falls into this new classification of a whiskey, American whiskey. They're sometimes referred to a blend of whiskey, blended whiskey, blend of straight whiskeys. You know, they're all kind of the same thing. As soon as you take two different classes of whiskeys and blend them together, you can't call it either. And so that one's super fun because it, again, is just, it's showing off kind of our blending skills. It's introducing the consumer to something, you know, totally radically different. That one's a really fun kind of straddle the line where it's 55% rye whiskeys, 45% bourbon whiskeys, but it's got enough of that bourbon in there where it really, even for a bourbon drinker, they feel kind of safe. They're okay, you know, because it's got the bourbon in there, but then it's got that nice rye pop. That's just like, ooh, that's nice. So That one's fun. So that's kind of a dark horse for us on the cocktail scene because it's just very mixable. Yeah. And then single malt, I mean, it's just crazy. Like this was kind of a, oh, by the way, I'm making single malt, maybe we should sell it thing. But I've been pleasantly surprised to see that it's coming. I mean, it's going to be ratified as a spirit by the TTB, by the federal government. So it'll have its own classification. They're right at the final stages of that. Nice. I mean, Jack's doing one, you know, High West just launched one. So it'll be fun to see how those evolve and how the consumer adopts those. Cause your classic Scotch drinker is probably not going to like American single malt because they're all very malt driven. They're very different flavor profile. A lot of us are using some pretty full flavored beer malts that you know really driving a lot of that flavor versus classic Scotch, which is typically a much lighter style of malt and the peat's coming more forward. A lot of us are using new oak, so that's creating some different nuances. And so it'll be fun to see how that category evolves over time.
Nice. Yeah, you mentioned the Lost Monarch. We have a new follower, and I apologize. I only know people by either their Discord names or Instagram names or their YouTube name. But the Whiskey Herd is his name. He just did a review because he had just gotten the Lost Monarch and was a big, big fan of it. Really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So shout out to the Whiskey Herd. I know he was excited to hear this podcast. Yes. And then we have another person that before each pod that we have a distiller on, they like to pick up a product from that distiller to drink while they listen to it. Catfish Dilly. Again, don't know the real name, I'll be curious to find out what he ended up picking up.
That's great. I mean, we launched Redwood Empire in fall of 2019. Mm-hmm. And at the time it seemed like a great time to launch a new whiskey brand. The world was good. We were all happy. And then, you know, we all know what happened in spring of 2020.
Yes.
But it's been a pretty wild ride for us. That being said, the culture of whiskey drinkers has been so amazing and, you know, seeing it out in market and even when we couldn't get out in the market and having people reach out to us and the whiskey societies popping up. And I've done so many Zoom calls over the years with people it's just so enthusiastic about learning about whiskey. And it's been just it's been a golden era for whiskey, you know, cultivation and education and it really is what catapulted our brand into success was just that word of mouth, like, hey, you know, have you heard of this Redwood Empire? They're new on the scene, but you maybe should check it out. And like the the social media, you know, scene really just kind of helped us to in the early days to blossom. And it's hard to get a new brand out there with, as you were alluding to, the shelf is pretty packed now. And so,
yeah.
So having that, that following, that grassroots following that are just drinking based on what they want to drink and they're honest about their feelings and they just post it. And I think it's just super cool that as a consumer, you now have access to all of that. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, you can kind of find the people that you have some trust and some faith in, and then like, oh, what are they drinking? Well, maybe I'll check that out. So it's been a great time for us. And I'm really excited to see where that goes from here. The whiskey societies are really fun to work with. Just the fact that they're just so hungry for education. It's just cool. You know, it's not just people getting hammered. It's like, tell me more about how you made that and the aging and, yeah. and the climate yeah. and all these different. And then a lot of times they'll ask me just like just deep questions. And I'm just like, wow. I mean, that's such an awesome question. Like, I got to think about that for a few minutes. So it's just,
yeah,
it's been a great time for whiskey. And I'm really excited to see how it continues to evolve.
Yeah. Well, and in my opinion, that's one of the great things about whiskey is that a couple sips of it can lead to amazing conversations, whether you're yeah. talking about how it's made or what it is, mm-hmm. or just talking.
It is a social lubricant.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And I have to ask you this and put you on the spot a little bit. What is your favorite non Redwood Empire whiskey?
Oh, that's good. That's a good one. I hate to call out. I love drinking everything. And so,
yeah.
And I go through phases where it's not even whiskey. They'll go down the rabbit hole of mezcal every once in a while, and they'll pull back out of that. I do love scotch a lot. And so I'm always interested to see what's going on with scotches. I'm not a big peat fan. You know, I like a little bit more restraint, and I think that shows mm-hmm. with our portfolio. So I'm kind of a little bit more balanced, malts. I do love Japanese whiskeys. If I had to call out, you know, an American distillery, I do love Four Roses. I love kind of their narrow focus and like, we're going to keep all these variables the same, except for this one thing. We're going to just change up our yeast strains a little bit and see what that does for us. And I, you know, from a precision standpoint, I love what that does and how they've been able to show that off and their range of products and kind of the delicate nature of it. So I'm a big fan of them, you know. And then there's so many new up and coming craft distilleries a lot around mm-hmm. us, you know, Frey Ranch, you know, just up the road, they've got a lot of cool stuff coming on. So it's a good time for whiskey.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the second or third time we've heard somebody say Four Roses yeah. was a good one for them. That happens to be like the first when I was really getting into whiskey. Yeah. That was my go-to for an old fashioned was mm-hmm. Four yeah. Roses.
You mentioned mezcal. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. You like the single barrel.
Four I did Roses, like the single yeah. barrel. The single
well, barrel. Yeah, of course.
yeah. You mentioned mezcal. Recently, or I guess last year, we were in Nashville and I tried a mezcal old fashioned and yeah. Somebody talked me into it. I wasn't
the whole
going
table
to,
got him after you got
but
it.
But yeah, after I got him the whole table, it did something really interesting to it. Mm-hmm. It was pretty good.
Yeah. They're pretty wild. I mean, I've been kind of reading. It's so interesting to see how different cultures, you know, make spirits and mezcal is pretty wild how it's made. And I mean, they're squeezing, you know, as much sugar as they possibly can out of these things out in the desert. But you end up yielding a pretty low alcohol product. And so mm-hmm. their spirit off their stills is pretty low. I mean, their still strength, you know, they get over 50% alcohol is rare from what I understand.
Yeah.
So but it's so full flavor because of that, because they're not mm-hmm. cutting, you know, a lot of yeah. modern column stills. I mean, you're coming off in the mid 140s. And so you cut that down to eventually 80 something, and you've added so much water to that spirit that you've mm-hmm. cut back a lot. Whereas mm-hmm. mezcal, I mean, it's all 100% distilled almost. So like there's a lot of different flavor nuances in that. So interesting to see, you know, just
yeah.
how different people make different spirits.
For sure. This was a lot of fun. I feel like I learned a lot, mm-hmm. not just about the brand, but just making how you guys make your whiskey as well. It's very interesting. I'm really looking forward to trying it. We're going to, for the listeners, we will have that next week while we talk about the free agency, because free agency hits on Wednesday. So we'll be talking about that and reviewing some Redwood Empire. In the meantime, is there anything else you would like to add about Redwood or just in general?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for making this happen. And this is great. I mean, we're still in our infancy, so the ability to get out and touch people is always exciting for us. And so thank you for your time today and for sitting and chatting. And yeah, I mean, we're excited to keep growing. So keep looking for us out in market. If you're looking for something special from us and you can't find it, you know, just go to your local retailer and ask them. Just say, hey, can you get Redwood in? Because a lot of times they can. They don't ask. They don't know. You know, we're still a young whiskey company. And so, so just keep asking for us and we'll keep making stuff. And we're not open to the public, sadly, right now. We're hoping to rectify that in the next couple of years. And so our goal is to have a much bigger distillery up and running in a couple of years so that people can come out and do a full tasting experience. So we have the equipment paid for and picked out and ready to go. And so our goal is to keep ramping this up. And so, yeah, keep hanging with us and we'll keep making fun stuff and it'll be a good time.
Very cool. Do you know off the top of your head how many states you're distributed in?
Pretty much all of them. I mean, if you get into some of the heavier control states, it's a little bit few and far in between. I know we just got into Pennsylvania, which was a big deal for us. Nice. I was in North Carolina last year. So I think we're in all of them to some extent.
Okay.
We might be a little limited in some of them, but we're pretty widely distributed now.
Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. Did you have anything else?
I wanted to thank you again. Like, this has been fun. I so enjoy learning about just all the different processes and what makes all of these, different distilleries unique. And this has been a lot of fun. And I really appreciate you coming on the show with us.
Cool. Well, good luck on the draft.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's not the draft. It's
the free agency's next week. But yeah, draft is coming up.
It is coming up.
As Bears fans,
we have the number one pick right now. But.
Rumors are a big trade is coming where we're trading out of it. Yes. So it's either take a quarterback with that number one pick or trade out and keep our quarterback. I'm very biased because I really like our current quarterback, Justin Fields. I think they should keep him, but I don't get paid to make those decisions. I wish I did, but I don't.
That's poor young man. Like they had zero time to develop anymore. It's so hard to get out there and you're mincemeat after like a couple, bad performances. Whereas the old days, it's like, I mean, you look back at the numbers of quarterbacks a couple decades ago and all of them, their first year was miserable. I mean, they were 2-14, whatever. And like, they got a year or two to really kind of rally. And now it's like, you have a couple bad games. It's like, done.
It's like, you're out.
Yeah. Well, even the patience with the coaching staffs is so short. I mean, our current quarterback, he's on his second head coach but third offensive coordinator, so it's hard to develop when you keep changing.
Anyways, all right, well, cool. Thank you both. Pleasure to meet you.
Likewise.
All right,
thanks so much. Okay. You too. All right, thanks a lot to Jeff. That was a ton of fun. Jeff Duckhorn from Redwood Empire Whiskey. I feel like every time we learn something new every single time.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too. The different backgrounds, we hit on that with him. That was a lot of fun. And you got to go check out that two column still. Got to check it out because the micro still, sorry, with the multiple columns, because it is really cool. I've seen a lot of different stills. I feel like we both have, and we haven't seen anything quite like that.
No, stills are pretty. We've gone to different distilleries, and when you're in there, you look at the still, and it's just like when we were at like the Foundry in Des Moines, they're massive, like not massive, but like just tall.
It is a very
super tall still. Yes. Going up to the O'Shaughnessy Distillery up in Minneapolis for Keeper's Heart, they have the fat copper stills, like they get fat at the bottom and then go up. Like, the stills are they're pretty, they're shiny and pretty, and they have windows and
they are
all the stuff.
Yeah.
All the bells and whistles.
That's right. Speaking of Keeper's Heart, I didn't want to drink something that is necessarily in direct competition with Redwood Empire. So we picked something kind of different that has a little Irish whiskey in it. And
it is March.
It is. Yeah. It is.
We are Irish Heritage 10 Month. Days away from St. Patrick's Day, actually has nothing like that's an American.
No, that is an American.
What
were you saying?
I was going to say it's in a, It's an American holiday.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're like, no. You're just like saying, cutting me down. Like, you make me second guess myself sometimes. No, it has in Ireland.
I mean, they have some traditions and stuff that kind of surround.
Yeah.
St. Paddy's, P-A-D-D-Y for them. But yeah, with it, the overblown proportion of it is definitely us. Mm-hmm. I remember Mark Rogers, our good friend from Ireland, was here during his first St. Patrick's Day back in college. He was here and he just thought it was nuts how everybody was dressing up and pretending they're Irish and all that stuff. You know, you're drinking your Irish whiskeys or your Guinness. Mm-hmm. You're wearing a bunch of green. You're talking like a leprechaun.
Maybe like a leprechaun? That's
yeah. Anyways,
well, that's an Irish accent. I didn't know that was a leprechaun accent.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Get out of Anyways. Here. We're going down the wrong path. Let's.
What I was going to say.
We are drinking because we're really excited. We've been tracking the Redwood whiskey to our doorstep, which will be here tomorrow. You'll probably meet them outside.
I got a sign for it.
Well, this is true.
Actually, it depends who the driver is. We have some drivers who. They don't make me sign anymore because they're going to
get
know.
People in trouble now.
Probably.
So maybe you should zip your lip.
FedEx and UPS, that's not true. Everybody makes me sign.
But anyway, did you already say that we were drinking Keeper's Heart Old Fashioned?
I was getting there and then you cut me off. Just kidding. I was talking to America here.
out.
I was drinking Keeper's Heart Irish Bourbon. You were drinking their Premix Old Fashioned.
Yes, Premix Old Fashioned.
Their RTD. Yeah.
Which I did ask for an ice cube and you didn't give me one.
I said your ice cube that is right melted, here. Well, it is now.
Probably good. You didn't pick the right ice cube because this would be water. Anyway.
Folks, I tell you what, it's been a long day. No, I'm just kidding.
It's been a long week for me.
Anyways, what we were getting at there is we will be doing our profile, taste profile, our review, everything mm-hmm. like that next week on Thursday because you are out of town Monday through Wednesday.
I am. It's a busy month.
I know, but we'll be here Thursday. And mm-hmm. you will be here Thursday. And so we're going to be breaking down the free agency.
So if you, okay, sorry, continue.
The free agency is going to be insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be insane. There's a lot of big names, especially at the running back position. But we got some quarterbacks. We don't know what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins, or Russ Wilson. I mean, he could make an impact somewhere. He could. The running backs.
I have a lot to say on Russ Wilson, but continue.
We'll save that for another mm-hmm. time. The running backs. No, you can actually air out your piece now. What do you got with Russ? Is it the money?
It's the money.
It's not his fault. That's the Denver Broncos.
It's Denver, but Denver would rather lose out on $85 million
than to keep him on their roster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're losing out $85 million over the next 3 years mm-hmm. to cut him.
Which is insane. That's a lot of money. And if you think about everything they gave up to get him,
mm-hmm.
that's going to probably go down as one of the worst trades in the NFL history.
Poor Russ. I remember when he was so exciting in fantasy football.
I know. I'm going to have to pull a sound clip because I remember saying back when it first happened, I said it was one of the worst trades. We're going to say this is one of the worst trades in mm-hmm. NFL history, and I stick to that. Anyways, running backs, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Austin Eckler, who am I forgetting? Tony Pollard, I guess. He gets some people excited, not me. That's going to be crazy to see them where they go.
Yes, it will be.
Rumor has it that, you know, all the rumors are flying, so who knows? But rumor has it that the Bears are going to make a run for either Saquon or Josh Jacobs.
That'd be good. You don't want Josh Jacobs.
I
but
prefer Saquon.
I prefer Saquon over the two of them too.
Yeah.
But Jacobs is still young for a running back.
True. But he did have a disappointing season. His average yards per carry dropped.
It was a different team in a little bit. Don't you think that team was a little bit different for him?
The coaching was bad. I will say that. The coaching was bad until Antonio Pierce took over.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was thinking, because, you know, Michael Pittman is no longer in the free agency. T. Higgins, no longer in the free agency. Gabe Davis, maybe one of the bigger names at wide receiver. And you think Gabe Davis, but think of Gabe Davis for the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
That could make a big impact. Anyways, we're going to be talking about all that next week. We're going to be breaking down what it means for your fantasy football teams, for the players that switch teams and the players that were on teams or on the teams they were on. Because a lot of that changes. Hit subscribe. Hit that little alarm button so you know when we go live to talk about the fantasy football impacts. Plus, we're going to be doing some shorts. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I was just going to say, if you got yourself a bottle of Redwood Empire to listen to today's episode, bring it back next week when we do our review. Yeah.
And drink with
us. Or go get another one. Go try another one and try it with us next week on the show.
And if you can put it on socials, tag us and let us know what you got.
Please do. I would love to know. And this was just, we had a great time with Jeff today.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to try those whiskeys.
Me too. Very informative, very smart guy. And a lot of fun to talk with for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, Miranda, my whiskey is gone and I can't wait to have the Redwood. How about you?
I'm excited.
All right. Going once, going twice.
Sold.